Masechet Tanit of 28. We're picking up on the Mishnah, which mentioned that the people of the Ma'amad would read from the Sefer Torah every single day, according to the days of creation, Bereshit Perek Aleph. They would read from the Torah itself during some prayers, but during other prayers, they would not bring out the Sefer Torah, but rather would read those sections by heart. It's not clear, however, from the language of the Mishnah, which prayers they read from the Torah and which prayers they read it by heart. The language of the Mishnah was Parasha Gedolah Kunota Bishnayim. If it's a long paragraph, we send two people for an aliyah. And then it says Bashacharit u'bamusaf u'bamincha korin alpeh. Now, Shacharit must go with the earlier one. We read two aliyot in the Sefer Torah during Shacharit. That's for sure. Then it says in Mincha, we read it by heart. But the word u'bamusaf in the middle, it's not clear, does this refer to the same as Shacharit, or like you'd bring out the Torah again at Musaf time and read it from there? Or is Musaf like Mincha, that we would say it by heart? That's the question. Ibaya lehu. Hechi ka'amar b'Shacharit u'bamusaf korin ota b'sefer u'bamincha korin ota alpeh. Is Musaf like Shacharit, and in those two we read it out of the scroll, but in Mincha we read the Torah by heart, like we read Shema by heart. In general, you're not allowed to read Torah by heart in public, but we do so for Kiryat Shema when we are reciting it not as a Torah reading, but as a statement, a pledge of allegiance. We all agree to the Shema, so we do sometimes read it by heart. That's what's option one. Or Dilma Hachikatani, Bashacharit Kodat Ota Basefer, only in Shacharit we read it from the Sefer Torah, Kama, and then Ubam Musaf, Ubam Incha, Kodin Ota Alpek, Kodin Et Shema. In the next two prayers, we read it by heart. So, where do you put the Kama? And we have an answer, Tashema de Tanya from a Braita, Bashacharit Ubam Musaf. There you go. See, Musaf goes with Shacharit. So you have to come to Beit Knesset because that's where the Torah is, and you take it out and you read it like we always read Torah. But during Mincha time, one person says it by heart. One person, I guess, kind of like a chazan who's going to say it out loud and lead everyone. Good. So now we solve that problem. That generates a new problem. Amar Rabbi Yoseh, v'chi yachid yachol likrot ivre Torah al peh basibur. Wait a second. Is an individual allowed to read the Torah by heart in front of a community? You see, the sages and some people, they knew Tanakh by heart, right? The sages seem to have known it. And so therefore, when they're sitting and studying or privately, you can recite pasuk by heart. But what you cannot do, because anything that's Torah Shebal Peh has to be Al Peh, Torah Shebichtav has to be Bichtav. So what you cannot do is you cannot make an official public recitation of Torah Shebichtav by heart. So what do you mean now that you're saying during Mincha, a one person would present it to the community saying it by heart? That is not allowed. So Ela kula nichnasin dekorin ota Al Peh kekorin et Shema. So rather, what it means is that not that one individual would say it and everybody else would listen the way the Torah is usually read, but rather everybody would gather together and they would all read it together like Shema, even though like in Shema, you might have a Shaliach Sibur who says it out loud and everybody will listen and say it along with. So maybe they don't know it perfectly by heart, but that's permitted because everybody is saying it. So that's not an official public recitation. So therefore it can be done by heart. Okay, so that's a really nice, important source there. Now, next clause of the Mishnah. Kol yom sheyesh bo halel, en bo ma'amad. So the Mishnah continues and says that anytime there's halel, there's no ma'amad in the morning, right? Because you're spending all your time saying halel. And so they don't make these special Torah readings during Shacharit. And then it went on and said, and during Musaf, this is, let's say, according to Rabbi Yeshua, the opinion. And remember, there was a machloka between Rabbi Akiva said one thing and then he changed his mind to be like Rabbi Yeshua. So then Rabbi Yeshua says, anytime, any day on which you say Musaf, there's no ma'amad during Mincha, which probably means Mincha and Musaf also. And any time that you have a wood offering, you don't say ma'amad during ne'ilah. Okay, so now our question is, ma'afdesh ben zeh lazeh, what's the difference between this and that? Okay, the question is not at all clear between what two things. There are a lot of things that we just mentioned in the Mishnah. What two things do you want to know the difference between? So I'll just offer one interpretation. We're asking, how come when there's a wood offering, do you skip the ma'amad during the ne'ilah, but not the ma'amad reading during mincha? Right, that's the question. Since the wood offering is done in the afternoon and before mincha, how come you say mincha and skip ne'ilah? Why not the other way around? And the answer, according to that, if that's the question, is halalu divrei Torah v'halalu divrei sofrim. Mincha has Torah force, right? We derive it from pasuk about Yitzchak, v'yaseh Yitzchak la'suach basadeh. And so it, or the Torah says you have to have, you know, pray every day. It's kene korban tamid, and so you have to do that every day. So it has a force of Torah. Therefore, it's more important than ne'ilah, which is a mere rabbinic decree that on when the Anshei Ma'amad will say an extra tefillah, and certain days we say on Ta'anit Yom Kippur we say the extra tefillah. So it has lower status. Therefore, Since giving of the wood is gonna, we need time to do that, and we need to remove the ma'amad from one prayer. We're gonna remove the ma'amad prayer from ne'ilah and not from mincha. Okay, there are other ways to interpret this question, but that's sufficient for now. All right, zeman aseh kohanim veha'am. Then it goes on and lists the 9 different times of the year, dates of the year, in which during which the kohanim and the nation bring the wood offering. Question: Tenor Rabbanan, lama usrichu lomar zeman aseh kohanim ve'am? Question is: why do we need to know this? Why is it so important that these are the dates? I mean, presumably these families, they know their date and they'll bring their contribution at the right time, right? Why do we have to learn all about this? And the answer is: Amru. Keshalu b'nei ha'gola lo masu asim ba'lishka. Lamdu elu v'itnadevu mishalahem. When at the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash period, when those who were in Gola, in Galut, came and made Aliyah, they came and they found that there was no wood in the chamber in the Beit HaMikdash. Big problem, you can't offer sacrifices and have a fire always Esh Tamid without sufficient supply of wood. And these families went and on their own, they offered to donate. And so they were so impressive. So v'kachitnu neviim shebenehen shafilu lishka mela'a etzim yu elu mitnadevim mishelahen. And neviim said that even in the future, if the chamber of wood is full, these families should still donate. Both because you don't want them to stop, because sometimes they'll have wood, sometimes there'll be not enough wood, so they should keep donating. Also, it's a wonderful thing that they have the chance to donate. So we're giving them honor by giving them the opportunity for donating. So we always recognize their donation, even if we don't need it. We want to honor them by accepting that donation and making it a happy day. Shene'emar v'agoralot. Hipalnu al kurban ha'asim, kohanim ve'alvim ve'am lavi bet Elohenu lebet avotenu, da'atim mezumanim, shana b'shana. So it's all pasuk in Nehemiah that we made lots, and the priests and everybody was going to bring their wood offering at the appointed time, year by year. So whatever your time was, every year you're going to bring it the same time, same date. Leva'ayel ha'mizbach Adonai Elohenu ka'katu ba'Torah, so that we can offer it on the Mizbeach, and therefore we see how important these were. They saved the day, these families, at the last moment, and therefore we're recording this in the Mishnah and for posterity to remember this, their great and generous contribution that they made when we were lacking, and even when we had enough, they would come and bring it. So we're mentioning it more in gratitude than as like an invoice that they need to know. Good. Now, on Tu Be'av, we read that Zatu ben Yehuda would bring their offering, but along with them was also others, Kohanim, Leviim, or other who didn't have any particular date, or Yisrael, who didn't know what tribe they were, and they wanted to bring. So this is the open enrollment day. Anyone can come and donate on that day. Tenora banan, mehayu b'nei gonve, ali u'b'nei kosasei kisiot. The Mishnah continues and says, also, these special groups, those who stole with a pestle, when that stole, they weren't bad people, they were good people. They did a trick. They stole the minds of the authorities. They deceived the evil authorities using a pestle and the descendants of people who packed dried figs. So these were special people, and we recognize their great contribution on this day as well. Well, what are these people and what did they do? Amru. Pam achat gazra malchut harsha shemad al Yisrael shelo yaviu asim lamaracha veshelo yaviu bikurim li Yerushalayim. One time, the evil kingdom, usually when you say evil kingdom, it usually means Rome, but in this case, we're going to see it's associated here in Megillat Ta'anit, an important historical source, associated with Greece. So this is sometime before the Hashmonaim, right? Some probably during that rebellion and persecution, the evil Hellenistic Empire said that the Jews are not allowed to bring wood for the fire, right? They wanted to stop all the Beit HaMikdash service, and also you're not allowed to bring Bikurim, the first fruit, to Jerusalem. Veoshivu peroz da'ot al derachim kederech sheoshiv Yerobam ben Nevat shelo yalu Yisrael la'regel, and they put guards on the road, so that anybody's bringing any fruit to Jerusalem, they'd stop them and say, no, you're not allowed to bring them. And these guards preventing people from coming to Jerusalem, this reminds us of what Yerovam ben Nevat did when he took over in the north of Israel and separated himself as the northern kingdom. He didn't want anyone going to the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, because then their allegiance would be to the southern kingdom. And so he put guards and says, no one is allowed to go down to Yerushalayim. You have to offer at the idols that the golden idols that he put up in the north. So, and also no one's allowed to even make aliyah to go to Jerusalem for the holiday. All right, so we had this big problem. What did the great sin-fearing people do in that generation? Have you saleh bikurim? They circumvented the law. They used a trick. And they brought baskets full of fruit, right? When you bring the fruit, you bring it in the basket, the first fruits, v'chipum b'ksiot, and they put figs on top. Untalum ve'ali al kitvehem. And then they picked up the basket, and they put a pestle, right, a big, crusher on their shoulder. When they got to the guard, the guard says, hey, where are you going with that? What do you got in there in that basket? They open up the basket, says, look, there's dried figs in here. We're going to press the figs into cakes. That's how they preserved figs. They make these big round fruit roll-ups, and we're going to use the mortar, which is on the way. We're going there. There's a big mortar where we're going, and we have the pestle here on our shoulders. And so they showed, yeah, we're not going to Jerusalem. No way, right? And when there's no fruit in here, don't look underneath. Once they passed the guards, then they decorated the baskets that they would do. They would, whenever they brought Bikurim, they would do it with great decoration and singing, and they brought it to Jerusalem. And that way, they were able to circumvent the evil decree. And so because they did that, we remember them for good. And every year, we celebrate their commitment and their ability to use deception against this evil decree. All right, beautiful story. Tana, so that's the people with the pestle, and it also is the people of Kosei Kitziot, right? So they seem to have two names because they did both of them at the same time. Okay, so now that we have that, Tana, hen b'nei Salmai hanetofati. Okay, we have another braita that says these very people are also known as the descendants of Salmai hanetofati. Either that they're the same exact people, or this is another family that did something just like them, so they're similar to them. Now, Salmai, we know this name from Divrei Hayamim, sons of Salma, from Bet Lechem than the Tophatites. So this seems to be some descendants of this family that is mentioned. Tenor banan, mahen b'nei Salmai ha-netofati. What is special about them? What did they do? Amru, pam achat gazra malchut harsha shemad al Yisrael shelo yaviu etzim lamaracha. One time, the evil kingdom made a decree that they cannot bring wood to the altar, which was mentioned there before. So this probably was the same, very same decree. So same story. And they have guards on the road making sure, hey, are you bringing wood? Where are you going with that? No wood is allowed to be brought to the Beit HaMikdash. The God-fearing ones in that generation, they take their wood that they wanted to donate, and they just hammer them into ladders. This might be a play on words or their name. Salmai, right, is like sulam. And they took the ladders and carried the ladders on their shoulders, just like they did with the pestle. Once they got to the guards, where are you going? Oh, there's a dove coat up there with doves. We brought it and we want to capture them. That's why we brought these tall ladders so that we can go climb up and get the doves. Once they passed the guards, they broke the ladders back into firewood and offered it. And so these are the very same people that they used one trick to get around the Bikurim. So now they use ladders to get around the other decree. And so these, we remember them for good as well. That's why we want to mention them all the time. They mention their good deeds for blessing. Whereas regarding Yerovam, who barred people from going to Jerusalem, and as the Hellenists did later, we say about them that the name of wicked shall rot. All right, so those are some great stories. And now we go on with that list, and we are going to try to identify some of these other families. On the 20th of Av was the turn of Bnei Fachat Moav ben Yehuda. Okay, so someone related to Moav who's from the family of Yehuda. Well, who's from the family of Yehuda and Moav? That sounds like David HaMelech. Okay, Tana, Bnei Pachat Moav ben Yehuda, hen Bnei David ben Yehuda. So there's another day that's mentioned of David ben Yehuda. That is King David. And so Pachat Moav ben Yehuda is the same thing, same person. So they brought twice, right, it turns out. These two families. Okay. Rabbi Yose omer henen b'nei Yoav ben Seruya. He disagrees and says it's Yoav ben Seruya. Seruya is identified as the sister of David, and she is also from the family of Moav and from Yehuda. And so this is referring to the family of Yoav, not the family of David. They're just their cousins. Okay, good. So that's a Bimeir and a Biyose. Now we have a similar machloket regarding another family. Be'asrim be'elul, b'nei Adin ben Yehuda. Another family that's from Yehuda, and we never know. Yehuda is a big family. It could be anybody. Is it related to David? So we have one braita that says yes to Rabbanan. B'nei Adin ben Yehuda, hen b'nei David ben Yehuda. That's David also. Divrei Biyuda. Biyose omer hen b'nei Yoav ben Seruya. No, these are also Yoav. So you see, according to the Biyose, the family of Yoav ben Seruya gave twice, right? They're related to these two. And according to the Bimeir, also the family of David gave on two different dates. All right, that we need that for the next line. Bechad bishvat shavu b'nei Parosh Sheniya. All the way at the end, it says on the first of Tevet, Parosh family gave again. They gave in the beginning and they gave for a second time. But this, our Mishnah only mentions Parosh as a person who gave twice. It doesn't mention anybody else giving twice. So we wonder, who is the author of our Mishnah? Lo Rabbi Meir, v'lo Rabbi Yehuda, v'lo Rabbi Yose. It can't be anybody. Rabbi Meir, litni shavu b'nei David ben Yehuda sheniya. According to Rabbi Meir, the family of David gave twice, as we saw before, through those identifications. And therefore, he should have mentioned that not only Parosh gave twice, also David's family gave twice. Doesn't say that, so Rabbi Meir can't be the author. Also, according to the Biuda, he also makes two. He says that the these here Bnei Adin was David, and so you have David Ben Yehuda and Bnei Adin Ben Yehuda. Those are both from the family of David, so they give twice. Mishnah doesn't say that, so it can't be the Biuda. Biuda identifies two families with Yoav. And so you should have said they give twice. Mishnah doesn't say that either. It only says Parosh gave twice. So it can't be anybody. So who's the author of the Mishnah? And we answer Lo Olam Rabbi Yoseh Utre Tanae Alibad Rabbi Yoseh. It is in fact Rabbi Yoseh, and those Braitot that we quoted before don't actually agree with each other. One of them quotes Rabbi Yoseh as saying that it's that this family, Bnei Pachat, is Yoav. This Braita says, no, Adin is Bnei Yoav. But these are, Rabbi Yoseh only said one of these. And there's just two tradents about which one Rabbi Yoseh said. Since Rabbi Yoseh actually says only one of them, gave, so there is no other double besides Parosh. So Rabbi Yoseh could be the author of the Mishnah. All right, and now next clause. Be'echad betevet lo haya bo ma'amad. If you remember, the Rosh Chodesh Tevet is also Chanukah, and on that day we have Halel for Chanukah, we have Musaf because it's Rosh Chodesh, and there was a family that brought wood, and so you have everything on that day, and therefore that cancels out all of the Ma'amad Tefilot, so on that day. Okay. Now we have a question. Amar le Mor Kashisha bere de Rav Chista le Rav Asher. Mor Kashisha asked Rav Asher a question. May shena halel de dache dide, or may shena musaf de la dache dide. How come halel overrides its own tefillah? Halel is said during shacharit, and so whenever there's halel, there's no ma'amad reading in shacharit. How come that's true? But regarding musaf, whenever there's a kaban musaf, you don't override the Ma'amad reading of Musaf. Okay, this is interesting because the Mishnah said, let's take it to be Yeshua, the last line there. He said, whenever there's Musaf, there's no reading during Mincha. So he's assuming that means there's no reading during Mincha, but there is a reading during Musaf, and he's wondering why. So Rav Asher says, you read the Mishnah wrong. Amar Rav Asher, hashta de lav dide dache, dide lo kol sheken. You can't read it that way. If Musaf will override the Mincha reading, all the more so it'll override its own reading of the Musaf Ma'amad. So that your question is not a good question, right? It's even more. Amar le hachika amar lach. No, this is what I meant to say. It wasn't clear. La litche ela dide. What I meant to say is, what's the difference between Halel and Musaf? Halel overrides only Shacharit, its own prayer. Musaf also should override only Musaf and not continue and override also Mincha. Why does it override more? That's his question. And his answer is, you have a good point. Amar le ika Rabbi Yoseh de ka'eke batach. Rabbi Yoseh is the hero today of this daf. And Rabbi Yoseh, in fact, agrees with you and says Musaf should override only the readings, Ma'amad readings of Musaf, and should not continue on to Mincha, and should not continue on to Ne'ilah, which was Rabbi Akiva originally thought. He agrees with you. Where do we see this statement of Rabbi Yoseh? In the following Braita, de Tanya. Rabbi Yoseh omer, kol yom sheyesh bo Musaf, yesh bo Ma'amad. Anytime there is Musaf, there is going to be a Ma'amad. We don't have the whole Braita, but the Gemara seems to know the rest of the Braita, and we have to figure out now, who is Rabbi Yoseh arguing with? Is it Tanakhama in this Braita that disagrees? So if you say that there is any day that there is Musaf, there is also a Ma'amad. So this is going to imply that Musaf overrides only its own and not the next one, meaning we'll have to say in the end that the wood overrides Ne'ilah and Musaf doesn't override Mincha. So there's going to be some Ma'amad at some point in the day. So that's the basic derivation. We're just going to go through the possibilities here. So Ma'amad Demai. which ma'amad are you talking about? That does Rabbi Yosef say that it would have to be so? And he disagrees with Tanakama. Ile ma'amad shacharit ha Tanakama nami'achi ka'amad. If you're talking about shacharit, well, that's before Musaf. And everyone would agree that Musaf has no effect on the Shacharit one. Even Tanakama would agree with whatever Rabbi Yosef says about it, right? No effect either way. So that it can't be that he disagrees regarding Shacharit. Ela ma'amad de Musaf. Dide namid la ladache. Rather, is it talking about it's Musaf itself? Wait, would anyone ever think that the saying Musaf does not override the ma'amad of Musaf itself? That's the key one, right? Because they're busy. They're busy bringing the wood and the requirements for the musaf. So obviously, it's going to override musaf according to everyone. That's not the question. Ela de mincha. So maybe the Bio says arguing regarding mincha offering. Wait a second, mincha korban esim dache. If there's a wood offering, that overrides mincha. This is a bit strange because it's assuming Rabbi Akiva's original position. Even though we rejected it, it seems that in this baraita, we have Rabbi Akiva according to the original position, according to which wood overrides mincha. That can't be the distinction between them because there will be days when there's wood and it overrides mincha. Rather, it must be talking about that they would disagree whether Musaf would override ne'ila, which was Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Akiva said yes, and he must be saying no. So now we know for sure that Musaf overrides itself and does not override ne'ila, and here you have to make another step. Since it doesn't override ne'ila, it probably doesn't override mincha either. Mincha will only be overridden by wood and not by anything else. And therefore, you see, according to the Biyoseh, yes, in fact, go through all the permutations of different possible days. The Biyoseh is the one that says if there's musaf, there's always going to be some reading of the ma'amad, and therefore that can only work out if Musaf overrides itself, but not anything else. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, Shema Amina, and that answers his original question. How come Musaf is different from Halel? Why Halel only overrides itself? Musaf should also only override itself. And he says, you're right, you have a good point. Rabbi Yosef agrees with you. Or he doesn't explain why the others would say it continues more, but at least he says you have a good support from a Tana. Now, v'litni name be'achad b'nisan lo haya bo ma'amad mipnei sheyesh bo halel v'korban musaf v'korban esim. In the Mishnah, you said that once a year there's no ma'amad at all, or Rosh Chodesh Tevet, because you have Chanukah, is halel, and it's Rosh Chodesh, and there was a family that brought wood, and therefore you have zero ma'amadot. Wait a second, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, also, it will be the same thing. Yeah, since it's Rosh Chodesh, you say Halel, and you say have Musaf, and that'll take care of the morning ones. And there was a family that donated on wood on that day, and that'll take care of Ne'ila, according to Bi'oshua. And therefore, that's it. You have no Ma'amadot. Why didn't the Mishnah mention Rosh Chodesh Tisan? Amarava zot omeret Halela de'beresh yarcha lav de'oraita. This is very important. But very important to know for practical halacha that Halel on Rosh Chodesh is not de'oraita. And that's why till today, we recite a half Halel. We're going to see the story in a second. So therefore, even though on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, even though we say partial Halel, it's not a real Halel. It's not de'oraita. It's not an official Halel. And because of that, they would say a ma'amad in Shacharit of Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Okay, now how do we know that this is different? D'amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yosadak. Shimona asad yom b'shana yachid gomer bahen et halel. Only on 18 days in Israel do we say a full halel. Eluhen, Shimonat yimei chag. 8 days of Sukkot plus Shemini Aseret. Ushmonat yimei Chanukah, the 8 days of Chanukah, which is actually related, right? In the book of Maccabees, second book of Maccabees, chapter 10, it says that Chanukah is modeled after Sukkot. They didn't get a chance to celebrate Sukkot that year, hiding out in caves. And so they celebrated 8 days of Chanukah, like 8 days of Sukkot. And they said Hallel every day, just like on Sukkot. So full Hallel. It's model, it's copying it. So there we go, 8 and 8, 16. Ve'yom tov arishon shel Pesach, only the first day of Pesach we say full Hallel, after that we don't. Ve'yom tov shel Aseret, and the one day of Shavuot, that's it, 18. Uba gola, outside of Israel, 21 yom. Ve'elohen tishat yimei hachag, we have to add another day to Sukkot. Outside, that's 9 days. Ushmanat yimei Chanukah. Chanukah remains 8 days. Out shnei yamim rishim shel Pesach, those first 2 days of Pesach, because either one might be the first day. Ushnei yamim tovim shel aseret, and the 2 days of Shavuot. So there you get 21. And what do you see here? No Rosh Chodesh is mentioned. So you see, Rosh Chodesh is not a day on which we say Hallel officially in a Doraita way. Okay, by the way, according to this, it seems that the recitation of Hallel on Chanukah is Deoraita. See, because here it says, right, saying on Rosh Chodesh is not Deoraita. That means the other days are Deoraita. Based on this, the Baal HaLachot Gedolot, when he counted the 613 mitzvot, counted Hallel on Chanukah as a Deoraita, one of the 613. And Harambam argues vehemently against this. How can you call it that? Chanukah is not in the Torah. There's no source in Tanakh. This is a rabbinic enactment. You can't call it that. And so he says, no way, you don't count Chanukah. And he has a whole different counting. To defend this, maybe the idea is that the Torah says, say Hallel on any day. That's a great miracle and salvation for Israel. And this fits in. So it's, you can call it Deoraita in the sense that it's an application of a Deoraita principle. All right, now, Rav Ikla Lebavel, Hazinu de Kakaru Halela Beresh Yercha. Rav once, Rav went to Bavel, he studied in Israel beforehand, and he saw that they were saying Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, and he was surprised by that. So you see that this was not something that they did in wherever he was before, in Eretz Yisrael, where he was studying. But they did it in Bavel. Sevar le'afsukinu. So he wanted to stop them, right? He says, no Hallel today. Kevan dechazad dekamedaleg dalugeh amar shema'mina min hagavotehem bi'idehem. Once he saw that, yeah, they said the first two paragraphs, but then they skipped. And they were skipping. They said, oh, they know what they're doing. This is their custom, right? By not saying the whole, the reason why we skip is to show that we are not saying Hallel. If you're saying Hallel, you can't skip. You got to say the whole thing. But there's an old custom that we're very happy on Rosh Chodesh. So we want to sing some of Hallel, but to make sure that we're not doing it officially, we skipped the parts, and that was okay. And that's the source of what we do today. Last line about this, Tana, Yachid lo yatchil, v'mitchil gomer. An individual, seems like it's talking about someone who's praying, if you're praying on your own, without a minyan, you should not begin reciting Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. If you started already, okay, then you can go ahead and continue saying the rest of it. The idea is that because it's a communal custom, so only when you're together with the community, then you say it. But since there's no obligation, there's no personal obligation to say Hallel, therefore, there's no reason to start it. If you started already, fine, then you can finish. There are a lot of opinions, commentaries on what this line means. And some say it refers to saying a bracha on it. You say bracha when you're saying it by yourself or with other people. So there's other halachot that we can learn from this. And now we get to the next part. Chamisha devarim eruot avotinu b'shivah asar b'tamuz. There were 5 things that happened to our ancestors on the 17th of Tammuz. Negative stories. Nishtaberu haluchot. The 2 tablets were broken. Minelan. How do we calculate this? Detanya. The Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan. Rabbi Yosef says on the 7th. Okay, they have different calculations that the Gemara previously went into. Now you have to make the calculation according to both. So according to one who says the Torah was given on the 6th day of Sivan, so Moshe gave the Torah then, and then on the next day, he went up to Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights to receive the entirety of Torah. And on the day of Matan Torah, on Shavuot, he recited to them the 10 commandments. That's it. He announced the 10 commandments, and then he went up to get the Luchot. He didn't bring down the Luchot on Shavuot. Okay. Manda amar b'shiv'ah According to one who says that the Matan Torah was on the 7th of Sivan, on that very day, he announced the Ten Commandments, and then he went and up to receive the Luchot. Because the Pasuk says he went up on the 7th day, and we're interpreting here to mean that that's the 7th day of the month. And once he went up, he was up there for 40 days and 40 nights. So now, everybody agrees he went up on the 7th day. How many more days are there left in the month? So there's 24 more days within Sivan. And we need 40 altogether. So 24 plus 16 will give us 40. So the 16 days in Tammuz, that's 40 days. He has to be up there for 40 days. And the next day after that is the 17th of Tammuz. That's when Moshe came down from Har Sinai. And when he comes down, he sees the golden calf, and Moshe breaks the luchot. So that's how you calculate that happened on the 17th. So the egel, and he broke them right there at the foot of the mountain. All right, so that's how we know it. We calculate it from the other sources that we know. Now, butal hatamid, that the daily offering was stopped. This may be during the time of the Greeks who stopped it, or during the time of the Romans before the destruction who stopped it. Gemara, and this, well, there's no source in any pasuk. This is just a tradition that happened on that date. Hufkea ha'ir b'shivasar v'aketi b'chodesh ribi b'tish'al ha'chodesh v'yechezak ha'av ba'ir uchti batre v'tibaka ha'ir. And our question is, were the walls of Jerusalem breached on the 17th? Wait a second, we have a pasuk explicitly in Yirmiyah that says, in the fourth month, that's Tammuz, on the 9th of the month, that's when the famine became very severe, and the end of the pasuk says, and the city walls were breached. That happened on the 9th, not on the 17th. Goes against an explicit pasuk. Big problem. Here's one solution. Amar Rava, la kashya, kan barishona, kan bashaniya. Detanya barishona, hubka ha'ir, betisha betamuz. When the Mishnah said the 17th, that was talking about the second Bet HaMikdash. The walls were breached by the Romans on the 17th. But the first Bet HaMikdash is precisely as Yirmiyah said. He was there. He would know. And it was on the 9th day. Okay, so that's what the Talmud Bavli answers. It's worth looking for a second at the Talmud Yerushalmi here. Asks the same question. Right, you said the pasuk says on the 9th, and you, the Mishnah, you say the 17th. What are you talking about? The calculation of the dates is messed up here. Meaning in the pasuk in Yirmiyah, according to Yerushalmi, both the first and second Bet HaMikdash, the walls of Jerusalem were breached on the 17th. When Yirmiyah was writing, the situation was so bad that they weren't able to concentrate to get any and the record straight, and they miscalculated the date based on wrong information. There was so much going on, and so Yirmiyah had the wrong date, and we leave it there to remember for generations, like the situation was so bad and confusing that they didn't even know what day it was. I think a lot of people remember in the beginning of coronavirus, no one knew what day of the week it was, right? When something's very bad, it's so confusing. That's a really kind of surprising answer to say that there's a kilkul in the cheshbon of Yirmiyah, but that is what Yerushalmi says. I think that Rava and the Bavli is a lot more straightforward and a much easier solution. All right, now Saraf apostemos et haTorah. Gemara, this apostemos burned the Torah. We have no outside information about it. There's no pasuk about it. This is simply a tradition that such a thing happened. Apostemos being the name of some general, probably a Roman general. Hamid Selim Bahechal. And furthermore, an idol was placed in the sanctuary. Some say it's from the time of Menashe. in times of the kings, but more likely at some later time, like the Greeks, when this actually happened under Menelaus and the corrupt Kohanim Gedolim, and then the Hellenizers and the Hellenists themselves, the Greeks came and forced the Beit HaMikdash to become a temple for Zeus. Minelan, how do we know that that happened on this on the 17th of Tammuz? Dichtivu ma'et husar ha-tamid velatet shikus shomem, from a pasuk in Daniel that says, from the time that the daily offerings were stopped and the abomination that causes appalment is set up. Daniel is writing all about the events that happened during the times of the Greek Empire, the Seleucids, right up until the Hasmonean revolt. So this is clearly talking about that, and it makes a correlation that when was there an idol placed at the same time that the Korban Tamid was stopped? We already mentioned before the Korban Tamid was stopped on the 17th of Tammuz. Well, it makes sense. It would be at the same time, right? When the regular offering was going on just fine, perfectly, when there was good leadership. But then once they turned it into a temple for Zeus, well, immediately they stopped the regular Korban Tamid and they placed the idol in there. So both of these are talking about the beginning of the persecution before the Chanukah story. Okay, ve'chad hava, and now our question is just on this pasuk, latet shikus shomem. Shikus is singular. Wait, was there only one idol? They only put one idol in there? One shikus? Va'ketiv al kenaf shikusim mishomem. A different pasuk in Daniel says, the wing of detestable things shall be that which caused appalment. So it says many shikusim here. Amarava terehavu. Rava says, in fact, there were two. That's why it says plural. Venafal had al chavre utvare de lide. And they got into a bit of a fight. And one of these idols fell and broke the hand of the other. Vishtakach dava ketiv. And then on the idol, apparently the idol that wasn't broken, it says, "An saveta charube betach yadech ashlimat le." Says, "Oh, you wanted to destroy the Beit HaMikdash, and so I will." Here it says, "I will give you a hand." I don't think that makes sense. Makes sense to say, "I will stop you from doing that." And so he broke off his hand to say, like, even the idol is being controlled and is showing that they are going to kill each other and they will not be successful. So that's why one pasuka says there were two, and then the other pasuka says there were only one. Already the idols were fighting with each other and destroying themselves, and so by that was a good omen that for good things to come, that the Chashmonim will come and save the day and destroy all those idols and repurify the Beit HaMikdash. Baruch Adonai Le'olam, amen v'amen.